Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The interview you're about to hear was recorded a couple of weeks ago, feels like years, before anything relating to coronavirus was on any of our minds. So there's no mention of the pandemic, and you can take it that some of Alison's plans, such as friends coming to visit from foreign climates, may have changed in the interim. But I hope you enjoy this little break from the reality we're now living in.
Hello and welcome to another episode of How to Be Sound, the podcast where I, Rosemary McCabe, speak to people that I think may be sounder than I am, slightly. If you don't already, I would love if you would consider signing up to my Patreon. It's patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe with an A on my Mac. It's where I share a whole lot of my writing, but it also helps me to make this podcast, keep this podcast running, to paraphrase an Arcade Fire song. Anyway, today's guest is radio presenter Alison Curtis. Alison, thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to me.
Not at all. Thank you for the invite.
So, Alison, I mean, people will probably know you as one of the, I probably would say, few female voices that has been consistently on Irish radio for the past, how long?
I don't want to age myself, but I've been in radio since I moved here 20 years ago, 21 years ago this month. But I've been on air since 02, basically, consistently, other than to take a little break to make a human and came back. So that's kind of it. Yeah, it's a long time.
Make a human. Well
yeah.
done.
Yeah, well done me.
that's no insignificant feat. How did you... I mean, this is probably going to sound slightly xenophobic, and I'm 100% going to barrel my way through and say it anyway, but how did you come here and end up getting a job on radio when it's, you know, it's quite difficult for women to get into radio, especially in 2002?
It was very male dominated when I started. So I got here in February 99 and I thought I'll stay until September because I was going to do a postgrad from U of T in Glasgow. And I was going to go and do 2 years there and then back to Canada. But obviously that didn't happen because it's currently 2020 and I'm sitting here with you. But basically I joined one of those agencies just to get temp work. And I was brought in as the PA to the then CEO of Today FM, which had just turned to from Radio Ireland. And I was sitting there and like, God, I was the world's worst PA. And I actually, when he left the company a good few years ago now to go back to RT, he was like, I would like to congratulate and thank the world's worst PA, Alison Curtis, because he would literally like, you know, he'd say, can I get a tea? And I would turn around and go, you've got legs. And he was like, oh my God, Alison, that's part of the job description. I'm like, what? But throughout that job, I was watching radio. I didn't know who Ian Dempsey was. He had just joined the station as well. I certainly didn't know who Eamon Dunphy was. But I was watching it and just knew, like literally said to the CEO at one stage, look, I've got a degree. I'm a smart chick. There's loads of women on air in Canada. You don't seem to have any. I would like a show. And literally thought I would just jump from, you know, making his tea or not making his tea, as the case was, to getting my own show. So I just watched radio and how it functioned over maybe only about 6 months. And then an opportunity came up to work on the Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show. And I went there and I was there for 10 years. But during that time, I pushed the CEO for my own show, again, on the basis that there was, I think there wasn't a single woman presenting. Breffni Clack had maybe the Love Hour on the weekends. But until Anne-Marie Kelly joined the early breakfast show, as in the 5 to 7 a.m., there weren't any. And then when I was on the alternative music show I had for 9 years, Last Splash, there was just the two of us. And it was just the two of us for many, many years. And then when she left, I was the only host on. Now, other female personalities were coming through. You had Mairead Ronan and you had Jenny Kelly on Ray Darcy's show, but they weren't hosts of their own show. And I wanted to be a host. I wanted to drive that desk. So yeah, it was interesting time for sure. And it's completely different now.
And do you have any thoughts about why no one had ever done what you did before, as in like that women hadn't come in and gone, you don't have any women on air and I want to be that woman? Suppose what I'm getting at is, do you think it's because you're not Irish in a way?
Maybe
that you had a confidence that
maybe. And I also had discussions with friends and staff members where I go, it's time to go for my raise. And they're like, what? And I was like, oh yeah, I do that every year. I'm like, my value increases every year. And they're like, this is not. Now, I was very polite about it and very kind of, you know, soft about going for that. But I was determined in my own mind that I obviously, you know, my value was increasing, my knowledge was increasing, so my pay packet should. So that stood to me when I, in the first few years, going, God, why are they not going? There was a difference there for sure. Mm. But I wouldn't say I was ever like overly brash in the way that I think a lot of people associate North Americans being. Like, Canadians are obviously the more passive cousins of, you know, and more passive aggressive cousins of Americans. But I guess it wasn't built in that was just a standard thing you did in your employment. You went and looked. So I was amazed when people didn't do that. But as far as women on air, like, I suppose RTE have always had a strong, and Current Affairs has always had strong female voices, like Marion Finucane. What an incredible person. And actually, I was having dinner with my sister early January. She was visiting when the news broke, and I did cry a little. And I'm not a crier, because she meant so much to so many people, and she did blaze a trail. So I think that they've been better. Commercial radio stations, I don't know why we were slow to kind of jump on it. Like, we are infinitely better, for sure. Still male dominated, but we are much better than when I started 20 years ago.
Yeah. I do think sometimes, though, radio is slightly unfairly maligned, because it's very obvious that radio is male dominated, because when you turn on any radio station in Ireland, there is a very strong chance you're going to hear a male voice. Mm. But what we kind of overlook sometimes is that there are a lot of industries that are very, very male dominated, but we just don't hear them on the radio. You know what I mean?
That's true, actually.
Like, we're not so plugged into, you know, what does the field look like when you get to a certain level in accountancy, or what does the field look like when you get to a certain level in law?
Well, see, there was this idea, and this was the basis for an argument to not have women on air for a long time. And I did study linguistics as part of an anthropology degree in U of T. And there was a study done that always stood in my mind, whereby they gave, and you probably know about this because, you know, being feminist and all like I am, that there was a study given to a group of people, and they gave men and women the exact same number of words to say, but maybe different words, so that people weren't picking up on that. And both men and women listened to this study, and everyone said, oh God, she's talking way much, like she's talking so much more. Mm. And it's all about timbre, I suppose, and voice. But that was always said to me when I was pitching for a show, that people were like, women don't like women on air. And actually a lot of people don't like women on air, but it's not true. And throughout my career on radio, I've moved, you know, from an evening show to a weeknight show to an early breakfast show, and then to where I really feel I'm at my best and at my home right now, my weekend breakfast show. And I've always had a 50-50 split of when the JNLRs come through, or 47, you know, split. Mm. But it's very much down the middle. So I don't think women mind my voice at all. And I don't know, I don't know where, you know, that study was years and years ago, but I mean, that could be an attitude thing that's changed, of course, over the course of time. So,
I mean, I can't help but think, if you had surveyed the Irish public in 1945, right, and asked them, did they like sushi?
Yeah.
How many people would have said yes?
Yes, exactly. Or avocados.
Do you know what I mean? But I mean, we didn't have the opportunity to hear women on radio. And we became so used to only hearing authoritative male voices. Mm-hmm. Then in a way, I think we got used to the idea that authority was male. I don't know if you've seen, I've spoken about this before, I think, on the podcast, but you know that documentary on Netflix, The Seekers, I think it's called?
Oh, yes, I've heard of it, yeah.
About there's a nun, I think, in Boston who goes missing, and then there was a whole investigation about, did she go missing because she was about to report on sexual abuse within the church?
Yeah.
And there's this whole kind of conspiracy, but it's narrated almost exclusively by women, because she taught in a girls' school. Mm-hmm. So it's narrated by her students, and then it's narrated by a female reporter who worked on the story, and there's one male voice. And I watched it and I realized on about episode 3 that I had kind of been subconsciously waiting for a male voice to come and explain to me what was going on.
Really?
That I felt like there was no narrator.
Yeah.
Because there was no male narrator.
It's interesting. And like something, you know, very much coupled with this has happened numerous times since I've moved to Ireland, as I do realize how different men were perceived and their role in the family was so different between Canada and here. And I like my, you know, I was born in the 70s, and my mom basically was like, I'm looking after what goes into them, you look after what comes out, basically. So he did the nappies, and because we were twins, and actually my mother had a stroke before we were born, so her left hand wasn't great. So changing those nappies back in the 70s with two kids.
She had a stroke, and then she had twins.
Yeah. So like, if, you know, obviously if my sister
very
had pooped at the same time. Yeah, exactly. Like, not good. But he was very involved, like really, really involved. And when I talk to friends that are the same age as me, they're like, oh my God, my dad haven't even known what a nappy was. So I do think that I did come from a time and a place in Canada where we were a little bit like, I don't want to say further ahead, but that's based on my conversations I'm having with Irish people who grew up in Ireland, that we, you know, and even when it comes to being like a multicultural society, like I really was struck when I first moved here. I was like, oh my God, everybody does look the same. Like, and I hope that doesn't come across as bad, but I was used to growing up basically in a Benetton ad in Canada. So, and I love that. And a friend of mine from Japan originally, she grew up in Canada, was here recently, and is probably the first Asian person that was in my home that, you know, and even my friend Kokora was like, God, this country is white when she got off the plane. She's like, oh my God, coming from California. But like, it was good for Joan. And I was like, this is Japan. And this is, she's from Japan. And we were talking about Japanese food and what, you know, and then her daughter's coming next month. And that'll be great from the exact same age for my daughter to see her culture more.
Yeah.
So I don't know what my original point was there, but basically, well, I mean, I think we have, like, I did come from a time that was different for sure. Yeah.
And like, Ireland has been very homogenous and in a way has kind of become multicultural much slower than other countries. And I think that's probably to do with a lot of the immigration that we've seen have been from the same countries. So, you know, there were certain years where you'd go, there was a huge influx of people from Nigeria, there was a huge influx of people from Sudan. And then you end up almost having a kind of a ghettoized that people don't mix as much.
Well, yeah.
And like, probably we're not as welcoming. But also I think the Catholic school system has a lot to do with it as well, that they, you know, you wouldn't have necessarily been going to the same schools as kids who've been born in Ireland.
I think of Ireland as like an extremely welcoming country. I do. And whenever racism comes up in conversation, I do, like, my immediate thing is like, well, Ireland's not racist. We're not, like, it's not a racist place. But, you know, obviously that's a blanket statement and we can be, like, people can be. But I think of Ireland as being really welcoming. And I do think of Ireland as a really modern place. And that fact that we've adapted so quickly, like, so many changes. And so, like, since I've been here, marriage referendum, abortion, all of that has proof that we are resilient in a modern country. And people always ask me, why have I not gone back to Canada? Because it's like, people, like, everyone's moving to Canada, and especially in the worst, you know, 07 to kind of 2010. Everyone's like, everyone I know is going to Canada. Why are you not? I'm like, because this is a great country. Like, Irish people are so much fun, spur of the moment. Canadians are, I hope I don't offend your Canadian audience, boring, bland. And we're very like, if I said to you, Rosemary, let's go for, you know, a drink, you'd be like, in Canada, I'd be like, well, I'm free after book club on Wednesday in 3 weeks. Whereas like here, we're like, let's go now. Like, so I love Irish people.
I feel personally attacked by this, because if you ask me to go for a drink, I'd be like, no, I do not do spontaneity. No, thanks.
But I love Ireland. And a lot of people are like, why have you not gone back? Because people here keep me, definitely.
But what about Justin Trudeau?
I know. He looks better with the beard, I have to say. I like that.
Oh, God, I haven't seen him lately. I did listen to a very interesting episode of Call Your Girlfriend where they were basically calling him a fake liberal.
I know.
And they interviewed a whole load of Canadians about it. We're basically, you know, I think there was a lot of opinion coming from within Canada that they're like, everyone's really fetishizing him in a way that I think people were probably fetishizing Leo Varadkar for a while. And they're like, he's gay.
And he's attractive.
So he's really liberal. He's, and you're like, those two things don't always go together. Look at Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
You know, it's exactly. That's not a fact.
Well, it's always been held against him that he came from a privilege. Like, I mean, his father was, you know, prime minister for years and dated Kim Cattrall and loads of people and stuff.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so like, I think that people have always been kind of like, oh, he's a privileged boy. But anyway.
Well, often though, being privileged gives you the freedom and the ability to be more liberal. Like, you can be more accepting of people if you've never had to struggle, really.
Exactly.
And you've never felt like you've fought for jobs with immigrants or you've, you know, had to vie for space with people from a different... Of course, you can be really accepting and welcoming and lovely.
Absolutely, yeah. And that was something that came up a lot in conversation in university, because pretty much everybody, like, U of T was not, I don't want to say elite, but, you know, you had to graduate from high school with really high grades to get into that. And then it was divided by... So yes, elite. So it was divided by colleges. And then the college I ended up at, you needed really high grades. So loads of us talking during that time about privilege and what it meant to be there. And, you know, the irony of it all is like these privileged kids sitting there talking about how lovely our life is, basically. But yeah, you know, you're absolutely right with that, for sure.
What were some of the biggest culture shocks coming from Canada to Ireland?
Everyone worrying about the immersion all the time. I was like, what the hell is the bloody immersion? I thought drinking when I first moved here, because as a student, like, I didn't personally drink in my early 20s at all, really. And it was only a couple times a year. And like, the first time I got really toasted was like, I was about 23. But when I say that to people here, most of them are like, I was 14. I'm like, what? But when I first moved here, I have such a memory of leaving work. I was still working as the PA at Today FM a Wednesday evening and seeing people struggle getting their change into the bus thingy. And I was like, oh my God, it's like literally 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. What is happening to these people? Fast forward about 3 months, and that's me going, take me to Glasnevin, please. much to Glasnevin. So I think it was that. It was like, and I know that's such a stereotype, and it's completely changed now. And I really think if you look at people that are under a certain age now, they're not interested in it the way we were when we were in our 20s. Like, they're more interested in gym and healthy eating and hiking and outdoors. It's totally different.
Yeah.
But when I moved here, it wasn't. Like, the average kind of 20-year-old was getting pretty smashed and stuff. So I think that that took me, and my tolerance was so low. And I also remember ordering a Sprite one a few nights, and people were like, that is such a waste of an evening. What are you doing? I was like, I'll just have this to start. And they're like, no, you're not. Or if I left a drink once, there was a horrible bar on the Keys and there was like a fire alarm. I was like, oh my God, out. My pint was like pretty full. And my friend's like, you can't leave that. I'm like, but we could die in a fire. I'm just going to leave it. Cut my losses.
I think that also speaks to Irish people's attitudes to fire alarms though.
Yes, yes. The thing, I think the nonchalant about a lot of things, but the one thing that I think, and I always say this about why I settled in really well. And when I go back to Canada now, I'm definitely, it's a square and I'm a circle. Like, it's definitely, I'm not a fit at all anymore. But I think I never liked authority. I never liked rules. I was never on time. And all these things appealed to me. Like, and as
they're very Irish things. Never on time.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, never. Very Irish.
But Irish people as a collective, I feel, are such strong, independent thinkers. And I was talking to a friend in Canada a few years ago, and he was born in Belfast. So were all his older siblings and his parents were Irish, but they settled in Canada. And he's like, what do you think it is? I was like, it's just so different. Like, when you come to Canada, like, it's just everything's so rule orientated. Everything is just being the good guy, or everything just makes sense, or, you know, you don't go against the grain and everything's polite. And I was like, what do you think it is? Like, and he's like, I think that North Americans lack common sense. And I think we move as a mob mentality. Whereas in Ireland, you know, we're not like, if you see what's reported in the news, and Canada, people are like, they do those tag, and you know this from living in the States temporarily, they do these tags going, next up, how water can kill you. And everyone's like, oh my God, how can water kill me? Whereas the Irish people be like, fuck that or whatever. So even the way we digest our news and it's presented to us, it's discerning. Like, we know, like, we're a smart, collectively smart, independent thinking nation. And I think that is the big difference when I go back to Canada. And recently I was at my cousin's place in Allure, which is a lovely, very scenic town. And there was a big festival happening. And in the morning, my cousin goes down with all these lawn chairs. And my husband, Tony, he's Irish. And I'm like, what's he going with these? They go down and set out these freaking chairs early in the morning and then go home and make breakfast and do whatever. And they're guaranteed those chairs will be exactly where they left them. And at the festival, everybody gets these drink tokens in these little mugs, like tiny mugs, and you're two beers at a time, queue really neatly. And I was like, this is driving me nuts. Like, I was like, this is insane. Really, really hot day, and only three queues were open. And I was like, this, such an Irish person. I was like, 20 people behind. And I was like, are you going to open this queue? Shout to the woman behind the bar. They open it, and everyone's just standing there politely. I was like, come on, like, and roll up to the queue. They're just so, like, so about rules. So I don't fit that anymore. Like, when I have an Aer Lingus flight back after being in Canada for 3 weeks, I literally just want to get on air and scream F-U-C-K. Like, I just want to be rude. It's very polite, but it is a lifestyle that is gorgeous over there. And there is, you know, healthcare that is highly admirable. You know, people are generally, I'm doing these sweeping comments, but considerate. So there is lovely things, and like space, as we were saying earlier, like the sense of space over there is just amazing. Like, houses and gardens around. So I do miss that side of things, but I don't miss the people as much. Do you have Canadian subscribers?
I don't think, I mean, I'm sure I do, but I honestly think most of my audience, no matter where they are in the world, is Irish.
Yeah.
You know, because that's kind of how you hear about me, or, you know, what appeals. I don't know, did you see Hannah Gadsby when she was here a couple of months ago, the comedian?
I didn't see her. I know her, though.
She has a whole bit about Americans and about how kind of Americans and North Americans more generally can't understand something if it doesn't directly apply to them. So she said, you know, when you'll say a word to someone, you'll say, I was walking down the path.
Yeah.
And they can't in their heads go, walking down the, what could path mean? They're like, what's a path? You know, that they're really like if this doesn't directly apply. What did she say? She said North Americans are the white men of culture.
Right.
The straight white men of culture that they're like, they can't understand anything
if it's not
unless
them.
It directly applies to them.
Yeah.
That was quite funny. Like, and quite apt, probably.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
And another thing that was a cultural thing for me when I first moved here is that I'd be like, oh, how are you guys? And whoever I was speaking to would be like, Gran, but how are you? And like right back to me, I was like, do they don't want to talk about themselves for 15 minutes and tell me like, you know, the trauma they had when they were younger, the medication that they're currently taking, like all this stuff that North Americans would kind of tend to be insular, like or in looking inwards kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Irish people were much more like, Gran, don't talk about me. Don't talk about me. It's under the carpet, well under the carpet. Don't talk about me. So that took a while for me to kind of go, are they really interested in me or do they not want to talk about themselves?
Yeah. So, and I mean, you do find out a lot about North Americans very quickly.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, fascinating if you're nosy, which I am.
Yes.
But then after a certain point, you're like, I want to talk about myself now.
Yeah.
Like, I want to tell you some things. I've been thinking of a really funny story for the last 10 minutes and you're not letting me tell it.
And I'm trying to hold it in my brain. Yeah. No, that was different for me. I was like, oh, what's this about now? Like they're deflecting or not speaking about themselves.
What was it like for you then when you did get your own radio show or you did get to be on air?
Yeah.
Was it kind of... I mean, the answer to this is probably no. Was it smooth sailing or, you know, did you have ups and downs? Was there resistance from within
the company itself? I suppose I had been on air on Phantom FM, which is a pirate radio station. And that was a great learning ground because, you know, it started out literally in a shed that is probably 1/8 of the size of the room we're sitting in right now and in someone's backyard with no access to a toilet. So it was not glamorous. And then we moved to the top of Grafton Street and then above Whelan's, which is where they were in Dublin for a really long time. So that was a great kind of training ground and learning. And it was all music based shows that I presented. And Ian Dempsey, who I worked with for 10 years, knew my dirty little secret, but no one else in the station really knew, except for the fact that I didn't change my name and I was North American sounding. So if they found the station, they'd put two and two together. But he had such a long career on pirates before, which is what radio was based, basically, other than RTE in Ireland for so long, was pirate stations. So he was really supportive of it. But then I went to eventually Willie O'Reilly, who's now out at RTE, but was the then CEO. I was like, come on. And literally, the time slot I got would not be on a commercial radio station considered high risk at all. So it was started out at 11 till 9 on a Sunday night, the last splash. And I loved it so much. And I was so dedicated to it. And even though I worked on Ian's show from 6 in the morning, I would often stay there till 4 or whatever, 5 to record bands that I wanted to promote, Irish bands or whoever, or do interviews. And I put a lot of work into that, those 2 hours. And I loved it. And when I took up, and then it moved from 8 till 10 about 2 years after. But when I took it up, it was maybe a listenership of 4,000. And at its peak, which wouldn't happen in these day and this day and age now with Netflix or anything like that or anything on demand, it was about 42,000-41,000, which there's no evening show in Ireland that has that at the moment that I'm aware of, because obviously people's attention is divided amongst other platforms. So I loved it. I really loved it. But I suppose as you get older, your interests kind of change. And I taught a class not that long ago, but I was like, if I ever have to interview a band again, I don't know what I'll do. But I outgrew it. So doing a nighttime show, which was still a music show, we got to bring in other features, which was fun. And then obviously early breakfast is very mainstream and you're doing news and that's where it kind of grew. And then I suppose after having my daughter, getting the weekend slot was ideal because it's very much about families. It's very much about what to do. And I loved it. And again, it grew. I picked it up. Martin King did present it from Virgin Media for maybe 10 years. I picked it up about 100 and grew it to 145, 146. So it is a lovely time slot, those 2 time slots to be on air. And I do love it. But it's not like there were definitely ups and downs for sure. And it is very hard, as you said at the very beginning, to for anybody, maybe not just women, but for men as well, to sustain a very long time on air now. And even from a male perspective, there wouldn't be that many now currently that have been on air for a long time either.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very difficult in 2020 to keep people's interests in you. And, you know, I think as a society getting more and more personality driven, that like people will follow individuals and they will listen to shows because they like the person who presents them in a way that maybe 10 years ago they would have been more, I listen to this because it's current affairs.
Yeah, or I'm loyal to a station, whereas now people probably, you know, flick around a lot more. And then like podcasting is amazing. I do love it. And I'm a podcast listener myself, but when people can get what they want exactly when they want it on demand, you know, although I will say other countries, probably the radio life or health of radio is suffering more than in Ireland, because I really feel in Ireland people are still avid radio listeners. Like, listenership figures wouldn't make the cover of newspapers in Canada, that's for sure. And people are still very loyal to stations and shows. So, yeah, I mean, we are pulled in all different directions now, though, with podcasting and Spotify and everything, that you can get what you want when you want it kind of thing.
What podcasts do you listen to? Just as a little, you landed that nugget there, so I feel like I have to ask. You don't have to say mine.
I have heard yours, of course. I'm not a huge Irish subscriber to podcast. Like, I went, and maybe this is sometimes, and like I would say about homesickness with Canada, rarely turns its head, but sometimes it does. And I got hooked on a podcast called Missing and Murdered, which is very dark. Did you hear that one?
I love Missing and Murdered.
And Connie Walker was the journalist from the CBC that put it all together. And it's basically, for anyone who doesn't know, it's about exploring why there were so many tragic cases of Native North American women on the particular stretch of highway in Vancouver, in BC, in Canada. And then that led me on to reading listening to Someone Knows Something. And Dave Ridgen is an incredible, and his style of how he treats his subjects and how he treats the subject is just, I really haven't heard it anywhere else. Like, he is remarkable, and he starts these cases and they can go on for years. Yeah. And the first one was the Mississippi one that he first started following, a man whose brother was killed by the KKK, and they knew the person that did it. And as a result of his podcast, this man eventually, now 45, 50 years later, was incarcerated. Yeah. And it's, what they do is amazing. So that would be what I like to kind of listen to, I suppose. But I really think we've got such variety now. Like, we're really, it's quite remarkable. And then Serial. Do you know the Serial podcast? Literally C-E-R-E-A-L, about food.
No.
That is hilarious. So it's obviously they came up with it off the back of Serial, starting with an S. And it's just two dudes talking about all the, like, analyzing different kinds of cereal. Those ones are so irrelevant and so funny to just tap into every so often as well. So
that would also speak to a current quest I'm on, to find Kellogg's Frosted Wheats.
Oh, yeah.
I've not been able to find them in a supermarket anywhere in about
really?
2 months.
I mean, I thought that's so hard to find.
I got very into them in America.
Yeah.
You know, they have like three
everything.
Aisles full of cereals.
Literally basically. Sugar. Yeah. In a yeah. cardboard box.
One of my proudest Twitter moments was when I tweeted about Dave Ridgen and he liked it.
Oh, wow.
I think I said, all I want in life is for a man to speak to me the way Dave Ridgen speaks to the dogs.
Oh.
When he encounters dogs and he's like, hey, buddy.
He's adorable. And Connie liked one of mine and the same thing happened. I was like, oh my God, I love you, Connie Walker.
I know.
But they're really powerful, powerful podcasts. So.
Yeah. Those ones are lovely. And I mean, there's something really nice as well. I think it's in Saskatchewan. There's some accent up there in Canada that sounds slightly Irish. So there are these moments. And I think it's probably because a group of Irish people emigrated and the accents have kind of morphed and evolved. But there is a really specific accent that I occasionally go, is that an Irish? And then I'm like, no, it's not.
It's not Newfoundland you're thinking of, is it?
It's which?
Newfoundland?
Yes, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's entirely.
It's
like,
amazing.
It's the most bizarre thing. And it's like, it's very Irish still because it's literally settled all by Irish people. And it's like, it's 4 hours by plane to Newfoundland or something, or three maybe even from here. So it's really close.
I'm so terrible at North American geography. I was staying in Fort Wayne and I am following this account on Instagram called Shasiko Studio, and they do really incredible eyebrows, right? Ridiculous. And I, because Indiana is in the Midwest, I had somehow thought this was west.
Yeah.
So I was like, we're really near Portland and Seattle. And that's not true.
No.
And so I looked up this studio and it was in British Columbia. And I was like, I wonder how long it would take me to drive. To drive. Not
12
even to
hours.
Fly. It was something like 35 hours. I looked it up. I put it into Google Maps and I was so shocked.
Is it 35? I would have thought, well, yeah, probably a good 20.
I think
yeah.
It was 30. It was a lot anyway.
But that's another culture shock when I first moved here is one of the first years I was like, I've got to go to Galway. I'll be back tonight, basically. I was like, what? You cross the country, you go to Galway and back in a day. That is insane. I'm like, well, not really. But that would be from this, you know, we're so used to big distances in Canada. Mm-hmm. And we have a family cottage that was 3 hours, 3.5 hours from where I was studying in university. And I often would pop in the car, go down, mow a lawn and pop back to Toronto in time for bevies with my friends or something. So I really was like, what's Galway's closer? Like, I don't understand this.
Yeah. I'm currently listening to a podcast called Boomtown about the oil boom in West Texas and in the Permian Basin, basically where they're doing a whole load of fracking and, you know, they're experiencing a huge oil boom, kind of reminiscent of what they had in the 50s and 60s. But there are moments where he talks about like the next town over, an hour and a half drive or something. And I'm like, what? And it's kind of like that I just forget. Like that I think this Permian Basin is going to be like the size of Offaly.
No.
And when in fact it's probably the size of Ireland. Because yeah. Texas is, or like Texas, the state, is three times the size of Ireland, I think.
Yeah, and so I mean, Ireland fits in Lake Superior, which is one of the five great lakes between Canada and America. But yeah, no. And actually the other thing that I was struck by as well was just how diverse accents were in Ireland. And I'm like, that's mental. Like literally Dublin 1 to Dublin 2. And yet you could travel across all of Canada, a 6-hour plane ride. And generally speaking, we're pretty consistent. Like you've got an Ottawa Valley, which is our capital accent. You've got Newfoundland. But that's kind of it. We're kind of consistent. And you're like, how can you go a 6-hour plane ride and we all sound the same, but you cross the Liffey? And it's like,
that sounds totally different.
Yeah. And how proud people are too. Like, the first few years I was on air or on Today FM, I'd answer phones sometimes or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, so Rosemary, you're from Dublin. Well, now originally Offaly or whatever. And you're yeah. It's so important. And I was like, why is this so important? But now I really get it and I understand why it is. And I think it's really lovely.
Now that you do a weekend show, are you do you do nothing Monday to Friday?
Nothing. Eyebrows. That's it. I do my eyebrows for 5 days. It is. I love it. And a lot of people kind of like, oh, you have to work weekends. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. But Aldi is completely free on a Monday morning. So I try to be good. But you know yourself, like, you know, I am self-employed and, you know, I do have other things that I do. And you have to be disciplined. And for a while, I was just answering emails every day of the week and doing calls. And, you know, you're chasing things. And then I was like, no, I really need to make Monday, Tuesday kind of those are free zones. And then also I find when you work in this, I hope this doesn't come across in the bad way, but when you work in an entertainment industry, anytime you're reading a book or watching a show or looking at something, you're kind of also thinking how you could do something with it. So you're never fully off in that respect. But thankfully it's not, you know, brain surgery or exhausting in that way. So I would find that I'd often kind of, you know, have my phone with me to make note of things. But as far as getting the show prepped and put together, I do try and make that a Wednesday to kind of Sunday thing.
Okay, so, yeah. Because I feel like, I mean, I know that in Ireland we love to discuss the salaries of RTE presenters.
I know.
And I always felt kind of sorry for Marion Fanouken. I mean, I didn't. She was earning a lot of money, you know, and that's great. But I feel like people were very much like, how can she be earning that money for 4 hours work?
Yeah.
And that's not really how it works.
I know. And people are always like, so Jess, that's grand. So what do you do for the other 5 days? And you're like, still work on the show. I don't just turn up and miraculously hope that it's there.
Yeah.
So, but it is, I do love it so much as an industry. And I think that you'd have to, or you wouldn't survive it that long. And like now that the JNLRs, the figures that tell us who's listening, who isn't, come out every 3 months, I've lots of friends that were in radio when I started that have gone on to do other things. And they're like, Alison, I just wouldn't have the skin for it. I wouldn't have the stamina for that kind of public judgment every 3 months. Like they just, we couldn't handle that. But I love it so much. And I love what it does as a medium is you connect with people right away. And my favorite messages that I get are like, you say hello to my wife. She's just had her third child. You said hello to when we had our first child and our second child and, you know, all these birthdays. And there's memories of like, you know, people shared memories, if that makes sense. So it's like, I remember when you said this and you said that. And I actually always kind of remember it as well. And I love it. Like I do really love it. Like you'd have to or else, you know, well, get out of the game.
Yeah,
you know?
You wouldn't be in it anymore. Irish people love us, say hello on the radio, don't they?
Oh my God, it's me. I could do it for 3 hours every Saturday and Sunday morning. But through that show, I've really learned so much about how we have changed as a society as well. Like that, you know, lots of small businesses are a big part of the show and how we've completely, you know, kind of taken back the food industry and how we want, you know, to be proud of our home produce and, you know, all these things and sustainability and all that kind of stuff. It's really broadened right out. And I've learned so much through people just contacting me on my social channels or online. It's a lovely community, you know, definitely it is.
If you were going to give yourself a whole load of extra work and do a podcast, have you ever thought about like that you'd like to do a podcast on X?
Yeah, I have. I feel I need to definitely consider doing that and get my act together because I got a lovely piece of machinery about a year and a half ago. It's been out of the box 3 times. And also I have to stop blaming my kid, right? I'm like, oh, she's got all these after school. I don't have time. I do. I'm not a mother of 5. Like,
she's,
you know,
18 now.
Yeah, she's 25. She's 8 going on 15. But I always thought it would be amazing to get a proper, like Dave Ridgen, investigative podcast on the mother and baby homes. I think that would be something that we could all learn a lot from. Mm-hmm. It'd be very painful for a lot of people to listen to. But I think if it's done extremely well, you know, it would be quite powerful for sure.
But it's one of those things as well that it would be very expensive. Like, it would take a long time. It would be expensive to produce because of the time it would take.
Exactly.
Like, who would actually invest in going, I'm going to pay you a salary for 2 years to create this podcast?
And actually, we went to a podcast, a Learning Waves conference not that long ago, and Eamon Dunphy was talking, and he was saying that it took 2 years to get Tesco Finest. I don't know if they still sponsor him, to sponsor it. And he was talking about the upstart, you know, financial things that he had to invest in it. And you're like, nobody has 50 grand or they can't just, well, you did, Dumpy, but like, you can't just decide to do that. So it is very hard, and it's investigative journalism as well, which I'm not trained in. So, but I think that that's something Ireland was pretty much crying out for, I'd say.
Yeah. And I think Ireland has a great history for investigative journalism that has kind of fallen by, not fallen by the wayside, but it's kind of disappeared slightly with the recession, I think. And as newspapers have got less and less money to send people on longer investigative pieces, you know what I mean? It just doesn't happen anymore.
But like RTE, you know, Current Affairs is remarkable what they achieve every year. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, incredible. Alison, where can people find you, follow you, listen to you?
Today FM, weekends, 8 till 11 a.m. And then online, I'm the same everywhere, at Alison Today FM on Twitter and Instagram. So,
do you ever worry that if you left Today FM, you'd have to entirely rebrand?
Well, see, I was Alison Curtis for a long time. And I was like, I'll just stick Today FM and see if it grows, which apparently it didn't. My Instagram is just pathetic. It's just not growing at all. Twitter, I don't know how you find about Twitter now, but I think, I still really think it's a valuable resource for me to put a show together and contact people. But I don't know if people are jumping on it as much anymore.
I love Twitter for... Twitter to me is almost like WhatsApp. Do you know what I mean? Like I love it for having chats, and, you know, sometimes I'll hop on and I'll kind of get into a conversation about something that I'm watching, or, you know, current affairs, maybe a little bit of politics. But I don't find, in terms of, it doesn't feel like it drives very many people to say, listen to my podcast or to my Patreon.
It's changed
but
a lot.
Then again, you know what? I'm currently crowdfunding for my first book that I'm writing. So I'm having it published with Unbound, which is a UK-based publisher, and they work by crowdfunding the initial publishing cost, and then they have a different kind of profit split. So it's just like a traditional publisher, except for the finances are done to them slightly differently.
Sounds good.
And the main driver has been Twitter.
Really?
Which I would never have thought. I would have thought it would have been Instagram, because Instagram is where I have my biggest kind of most engaged
audience. I find Instagram really a kind space. And I suppose that's obviously who I'm choosing to follow. And I get lots of great like content ideas and recipes and all sorts of things. I love it. But it's really, I find it's judging... Like my audience on the weekend on a Saturday is around 136, 137 at the moment. But my Instagram following is a fraction of that, even though I've said the handle loads of times. So that does say to me that it's still quite a young maybe thing. I don't know.
I think it's quite young, but I also think people more and more are looking at Instagram for kind of inspiration or for kind of a magazine type escapism.
Yeah.
So Twitter is kind of where they go for like talk and current affairs and like, quote unquote, real talk. Mm-hmm. And Instagram is where they go to look at pretty
pictures. It's fascinating, actually. Someone's doing a thesis on this somewhere in the world. I know they are.
Well, I'm sure there's loads of people doing theses on them. I just hope one of them's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat to me. Thank you guys for listening. And thank you to Liam Geraghty, my producer, whose own podcast, Meet Your Maker, you can listen to wherever you're listening to this, or you can get it at meetyourmaker.ie. As I mentioned at the top, but I'll mention it again, please do consider subscribing to my Patreon. It's patreon.com/RosemaryMcCabe with an A in my Mac. You'll get 3 exclusive essays minimum each week, 1 video each month. You'll get mini-sodes, mini-episodes of the podcast, and more. So that's on patreon.com. And lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It really helps other people discover the podcast and helps me feel better about the work that I'm doing. Thank you. Bye.
How to Be Sound is a member of The Warren, the home of great Irish podcasts. For more, including my podcast, The Critter Shed, see thewarren.ie.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.